Unbelievable. We are back. It's only been like, what, 2 months since our last episode?
Yeah, has it been 2 months? It was during the strikes.
But before that, we hadn't recorded in like a year.
Right, we don't record. We're like a podcast that doesn't record.
That's true.
I talked to people about podcasting, and they say like recording is like probably number one. Consistent recording is like, it's kind of like
debatable.
Yeah, it's debatable. We've made a good go of it doing these little things. Hopefully, it's more consistent starting now.
I mean, like, we had a whole meeting the other night.
We did. We broke up.
The board's behind me.
Yeah,
the board's over there. I don't know if I want to turn it. Well, I don't know what it's going to say. You know, let's see. Hold on.
Oh boy. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that I don't even. I'm trying to pull Twitch up to see what this looks like on our end, but I cannot read that on my screen.
Takes are back.
They're back. Which is funny. Because it's like
we always think that there should be less takes, but when there's no takes, you're going, "Where's the takes?"
Well, the thing is, like, yeah, it's also just at this time of year, you know, like the Oscars are in a couple of months. You know, we're starting to talk about, you know, starting to think about the Oscars as these, you know, contenders are premiering. And this is normally the time where it's like, all right, you know what? I've seen enough. I've seen enough takes.
Yeah, usually the take. Yeah, and you know what? It's. They're coming back. They're coming back pretty fierce.
Yeah, you know what? I'm just remembering now. I wanted to open the episode up. I'm just like reading a take. I don't know. Like what? I'm trying to figure out what the latest.
What the latest take it? Like, okay. What kind of take are you talking?
I'm talking like the hottest sort of take we can get. You know, like I'm talking the stove's been on.
Okay. I'm trying to think. I mean, because like normally we see the takes and you digest it and then you gotta get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't keep the take in your head. While you look for a take, I'll say this. I think that early on during the strikes, when we had the whole entire influencers and stuff like that, the whole idea around scabbing.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, and it's like, it's hard. It's hard to tell a group of normal people, like, hey, just don't talk on the internet about movies. Like, that's tough. And I don't think I realized till after we were back,
mm-hmm.
like, how much the conversation on at least the timeline I see on Twitter was away from movies and how it's flooded right now with movie takes and movie talk.
Yeah, like because it was a weird thing because like obviously like critics were still allowed to talk about movies.
I mean, yeah, that's their
job. Which I feel like that's kind of mostly who I follow. There were other people just like yeah, not really talking about it as much. The only time it was like people, you know, were supposed to say something about it because that was their job. Whereas. Yeah.
But I think it was the engagement with it also. It's like there wasn't here's a critic review of it and here's a lot of the other stuff I follow retweeting and quote. You know what? You know, it's like once that we were back, I was like, oh, here's all the Oppenheimer talk. You know what I mean? Like, here's all the talk about Oppenheimer I feel like it was low.
Yeah, and that also just coincided with Oppenheimer just came out on Blu-ray.
Yep.
Just our DVD 4K, you know, digital, like physical release. It also had just popped up, I think, maybe a week or so before it was available to stream probably overseas, because I was seeing clips about it.
Yeah.
Posted. So it was more of that. So it did coincide a little bit with that. So that was like good timing, great timing for Oppenheimer. You know, You know what? That's the new take. That's what the latest take is. Let me find it. There is a new take. Re Oppenheimer.
Yeah? Is it about how it relates to its release and the strike and everything?
It's how long it took for it to come out on DVD.
Right.
Which, so if we take a look at it, it was an IndieWire article. The long Oppenheimer theatrical window and its tiny added gross makes the case for earlier home releases. Now, I haven't read the article, so I don't know exactly when they say tiny added gross. I guess I'm just like, it's, you know, week 12, whatever the later weeks, I guess it wasn't obviously making it nearly as much money as it had before. I've seen counterpointed with like, okay, well, let's take a look. The 4K discs are sold out. Like, they sold out immediately. The movie, you know, it was hard to get it. I remember looking at it maybe in August, trying to get seats, middle of August, and it was like 2 weeks after it released, and it was like impossible to get decent seats. And then, you know, it had its legs. I kept getting updates. It's like, oh, it's nearing $1 billion. I don't know what its gross is at right now, what its final gross was in the movie theaters. But
I have the article, the IndieWire article up now. The long Oppenheimer theatrical window and its tiny added gross. I don't know. Why is everything? I don't. 45 days into its run, the impact. Okay. I mean, it's going over about. I don't want to fucking, every single time I look at a movie, I got to look at a movie through the lens of like, oh, could it have made more money if they would have released it on home quicker? And then they'll do that. And then we're going to be having the conversation again about how much we need to be in the theaters.
Right.
Then you'll go to the theater. Look at the holdovers right now. They're like, they're going to put this movie on fucking home. The theaters have been packed.
Yeah. I saw it on a weeknight. Went to see the whole movie on the week, and the theater was pretty much full. It might have been a Monday night. I mean, granted, I'm in Los Angeles, so like you're gonna get more of that out here. But like holdovers, this Oppenheimer grossed $950 million, and it's the first time I've ever seen a movie sell out so many discs at launch that the studio had to put out a whole statement saying they're working on more copies. It's unprecedented and proved the wait was effective.
Yeah, I mean, I also won't have my copy until the 9th of December.
Right.
Like, now, I ordered it. It was sold out, and then I ordered it, and now it's just going to take a little bit longer.
Mm.
But, so how, you know, like, Oppenheimer, Barbie, Barbenheimer happened while we were away. So, you know, how was that experience for you?
That was Barbenheimer. Yeah. I mean, great. It's probably the highlight of movie going this year.
Yeah.
We went to see, well, we saw Oppenheimer separately.
Yes, correct. And then we came together for Barbie.
Yeah. I'm trying to put it into words. It's so weird because I remember leaving the theater and it's like, well, you know, I got a shirt, you know, we like all got Barbenheimer shirts and we went to go see it. And it was like, well, we're not going to be able to talk about it until I don't really know when. But I guess now is the time. I mean, it was such a cool experience. Like we just said, we did Oppenheimer first. There was that whole debate that when it was coming out, which do you see first? Do you see, you know, do you have your dinner and then your dessert, or do you have dessert first? And I agreed with both takes. I for the longest time was like Barbie first, Oppenheimer second. But the group that I went with, majority wanted to rule the other way. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm fine with that. I don't care too much either way. But my whole thing was like, the event for me is Oppenheimer.
Yeah, and that's what it turned into, is you were buying Barbie tickets. You already had Oppenheimer. So I was like, all right, I want to do both in the same day. And part of that was I didn't want to go meet up with you for Barbie, and I didn't see Oppenheimer, and you did. And everyone's like, oh, my God, Oppenheimer. You know what I mean? I was like, fuck, right. I want to do this. Mm-hmm. So I sat, me and Kate sat in the second row at the fucking 10 a.m. showing at the Chinese theater,
mm-hmm.
which was incredible. First time at the theater. It's beautiful. It's massive. And luckily, there's enough room in between the first row of seats and the screen, because when they do Q&As and stuff, like, so we were good. The seat went back mm-hmm. a little bit. I was good. And I remember I've said this to you when you were here for Thanksgiving. It's like, I remember it starting and being like, how, like, what's the Nolan version of like a biopic look like? Like, what is that? Cause you know, like even you look at Dunkirk, like, oh, he did War a little different. You're looking at it from different timelines and stuff. Like, what's what's the Nolan thing going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And then the movie started and you get the score and he's looking at the raindrops and this whole, and you're like, I was like, oh, okay. I get it. We're good. Yeah. Like I never doubted it, but I was like, okay, I understand the tone that we're setting here. So that experience was great. I remember I got out of it. I was out of Oppenheimer as you were going in.
Yes. Yes.
So I remember I texted you something like, Jesus Christ. And you're like, that's all I need to hear.
Right. I'm trying to, like, let's see if I can. Can I search my messages by date? I don't think I can.
You might be able to, but you were like, oh, that's all I need. I was like, all right. And then I went home. You went to see Oppenheimer, and then we met up at Universal after.
Mm-hmm.
And got ready to get our fucking Barbie on.
Yeah. How long ago was this? This is like 4 months. 4 months ago?
July, right?
How far back? The thing about movies and the thing about just how everyone's brains works, specifically how my brain works, I asked you to send me over the list of the topics that we were like, okay,
yeah.
We sat down and we were like, let's go over what has happened since we decided we weren't going to be talking about this stuff. In solidarity with the actors and writer strike. And I looked at it and I was like, and we had stuff written down that happened like a week ago that I'm like, oh my God, that was a week ago. Like my brain had already.
Your time, it's all off.
Totally. But like my brain, but also it was like my brain, like, oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Like that felt like such a, like things that we looked back on that, which we'll get to, was like, that felt like the biggest thing when it happened. It was the biggest thing, at least in the industry that we were talking about.
And then, now it's a blip.
Now it's like, oh yeah. So now even now we're looking back to the end of July, which I'm trying to think. I think Oppenheimer tickets went on sale first. Right. Oppenheimer tickets went on sale first. I woke up at 5 a.m. and got tickets.
Okay.
And then Barbie, I remember it was sort of like, are they going to release tickets? Like it's because normally they're like, oh, they'll put tickets on sale like a month before. And they hadn't happened yet, or we were still waiting to see. And then they finally put them up. And I think I woke up the same time, but I didn't have to wake up that early for the Barbie one. But that was just, yeah, like that was, I think I'm glad that we did it that way. Oppenheimer first, because I, you know, Oppenheimer watched in the afternoon. I came out and I was like, I was vibrating after seeing it. And then it was like, okay, we're going to grab a drink at the movie theater bar, get some food. And then we'll go into Barbie. And yeah, Barbie was just fun. It was a nice little treat, but also like there was something, which this isn't a new take, like something old Hollywood about it with all the sets and stuff like that that you got to see. And that was just, and then particularly, you know, we've talked about it already, but like the performances in it, like the, you know, we go to bat for Ryan Gosling, famously on this podcast. You awarded him performance of the decade for his body of work.
Yeah, his whole body of work. So we're always 2010 to 2020.
Yeah, we're always stumping for him. But that was just such a funny performance, and Margot Robbie's incredible, and the whole cast is really fun. And yeah, it was a great time, and it's something that I don't know if they're ever gonna, they're not gonna be able to replicate it, or it'll be hard for them to replicate it.
Yeah, because the whole, it's like the whole thing came about, like it wasn't like, oh, we're gonna do it like this, we're gonna try and market this. It's like two studios, Chris Nolan's old studio, is like, oh, you want to release this day? We'll release that day. And it turned into something fucking great. Real quick. All right, here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
Ready? Your favorite performance in Oppenheimer that was not Cillian Murphy, not Downey Jr.
Okay.
Not Damon, and not Casey Affleck. And no, okay. Emily Blunt
interesting.
Either.
Interesting. I'm curious. Why is Casey Affleck thrown as in? I can't choose Casey Affleck. I know he's a bigger name, but it is small.
Yeah, he knocks it out of the fucking pack. That guy.
It's terrifying. And I've heard people say this too. It was one of those things where it's like, are they going to even show his face? I knew whose voice I was hearing.
Yeah,
and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, he's great in it.
Yeah, he's great. That one, Krumholz.
Krumholz.
It's gotta be Krumholz.
That's a good pick. You know why it's a good pick? I'm usually not crazy about the Krumholz.
Whoa! What do you mean?
I'm not crazy about the Krumholz. You're telling me before you saw this movie, you got nothing but Krumholz on the brain?
That's funny. I'm trying to think of like what has Krumholz been in? Like I'm trying to think of performances. Obviously, he's in Santa Claus.
So here's the thing: it's really nothing against him. It's just the roles that they gave him, like in movies that you saw, like growing up. He's always like the annoying, like, and I'm like, oh my god, I get it, dude. I get it. I get the character. I get it. Mm-hmm. And then he's in this. He's fucking great. He's great. I mean, you could have picked Jack Quaid. He got cute little bongos.
The bongos.
You could have picked Einstein. But
another thing that the internet has ruined has just been rewatching movies, because, and it happens so often in Nolan movies, whereas like there's the shot of him like coming out of the car drives by and he's just across the street and he's walking, and it was like people were joking about it the whole time. So when I just rewatched it, that happened and I was like laughing at it. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah. Good pick. You know where I thought you were gonna go?
Where?
You had Hartnett was sitting right there for you.
Hartnett, look.
Hartnett. What about Han Solo?
Alden.
What about Alden?
Alden's great. My review on Letterboxd for my rewatch of Oppenheimer was I want one of those shirts that just reads, you know, like with all the names.
Yeah.
It's like I want a shirt that says Murphy and Downey Jr. and Hartnett and Ehrenreich and Krumholz.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all great. Not a bad performance in there. Yeah.
Do you have a pick? Are you hitting the bongos?
No, I mean, I'm trying to think. Probably Alden. He's fucking great in that movie. He's really fucking good in that movie. But Branagh, what about that performance?
Branagh's like, hey, Chris or Alden, I'm gonna come in. I'm gonna do an accent.
Yep.
All right, throw some ham on the dish.
Oh my god.
It's truly like calling it like a that guy movie is probably does a disservice to a lot of these like well known like people know like it, Kenneth Branagh, like obviously like Josh Hartnett had, you know,
people know who they are.
People know
it's
who
not
they are.
That guy from.
Right, but it's just there's just so many actors who are coming in and just doing excellent work. You can give me a list of five from the movie because there's so many different people. Give me a list of five people who can be different every single time.
Actually, it was a trick question, and the correct answer was Florence Pugh. So, way to go.
It was the chair.
Maybe,
it was
maybe,
the armchair. Yeah. It was very
good movie. Very good movie. Nolan directed the shit out of it. I mean, that's obviously apparent. Now we go to Barbie, right?
Well, I think it's good. I think, you know, we haven't really done this podcasting thing for so long. And I think it's important that we come out and we just let people know that Oppenheimer is a good movie.
Yeah, it's good. We told you the takes
are
back.
People have been waiting. Yeah.
They're piping hot. That Oppenheimer, pretty good movie.
If we're going to name this episode Takes Are Back, we're probably going to have to come up with some heaters by episode's end.
Yeah, we'll get – don't worry. We'll get some heaters in there. A week before Barbie, which made $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Right. A week before, there was another movie in IMAX that we went to go see.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun. You know, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
That's it. Just Dead Reckoning, Part 0. That's it. Because they're changing the name.
Are they?
Yeah. The sequel will not be called Part 2. I think they.
That's fire.
I think they.
That's
came out
fire.
That. Yeah. So.
They're cooking now. They came out and said, "I know we released it. Every poster says Dead Reckoning Part 1.
The
but it's just
all
Dead
over
Reckoning.
The city. Yeah.
Dead Reckoning's a good name.
No, Dead Reckoning's
like,
a great
cool.
name. And
I think
Cruise, that no stranger to a name of a movie essentially being changed.
Ah, are you talking about Live, Die, Repeat, also known as Edge of Tomorrow?
Edge of Tomorrow. Yes.
It's great because on the cover of it now when you see it, it's like Live, Die, Repeat,
Edge of Tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow. You know, yeah. Like the take for that movie was always just kind of like, oh, Live, Die, Repeat, way better name. And it's like very clear, you know, it's very to the point of like, I get what the movie is. I feel like Edge of Tomorrow... I feel like they're not that different. They're not that different of names.
No. Edge of Tomorrow's a good name.
It's a good name. Good movie.
Not bad. I like that fucking movie a lot.
Now that's a movie with Emily Blunt getting nominated probably for Oppenheimer. Now, that's a movie I'd nominate her for.
Edge of Tomorrow?
Yeah. That'd be like a sneaky, like fun, you know.
Why not?
Yeah.
Come on. But only had its quick 1 week. I think the most we get to the theater, we sit down, movie starts. I'm in shock and awe immediately. Had no idea that this was a submarine movie. You know what I mean? Mm. And oddly enough, the week before we went, I was like, you know what? We don't have enough of submarine movies. So I watched a couple submarine movies, and now I go to this thinking I'm getting Mission Impossible. What am I getting? Mission Impossible? We're a little sprinkling of submarine.
Mm. That's good. Sound whistle.
Have you rewatched yet?
I have not.
I haven't either.
But it's available. Is it? It's.
It might be on Paramount.
Okay. It's definitely going to be streaming on Paramount whenever it's ready. I know it's on digital. You can rent it, buy it at this point.
I like it. I think it's fucking good.
I think it's good. It's the first time. As much as I'm not taking away from it, because like I absolutely love that movie. I had so much fun. There was parts where I was like hopping in my seat when I knew something was coming or they were doing something that was like really impressing me, which is what's so great about these movies. It was the first time where I was like, because like something that they always say is like Tom Cruise and McQuarrie will always talk and be like, what do you want to do? Like, what sort of stunts you want to do? And Tom Cruise was like, like to jump off a cliff, I guess. Yeah. And then they structure the plot around those like big action set pieces. This was probably the first time where I kind of felt that, where I was like, okay, they're doing it just so he can do this.
Yeah, I gotcha.
With this one specifically, doesn't make it any less thrilling. Like, there's, yeah. That's a whole podcast in itself. It's just talking about the different stunts, the different movies, the different Mission Impossible movies.
Now, who's your MVP of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning?
The yellow car.
Yellow car was good.
The yellow car sequence. It's a Buster Keaton movie. It's a Buster Keaton sequence.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's fantastic. Thing. It's like you watch these movies and it's like, how are they going to escalate it? He jumps out of a freaking plane.
And I do like that, like with the Buster Keaton shit, they're like, let's just go all the way back. Instead of pushing the envelope, let's go back to something that was there before and figure out a way to do that.
And that's just one of those things where I was like, oh, wow, this surprised me. I'm impressed by it. And it was hilarious.
Yeah, Haley Atwell was my MVP.
Okay.
I mean, what's her face? Palm.
Palm does so much without speaking in that movie.
Speaking. She's fantastic in that movie.
Seeing that movie in IMAX, which I'm glad we were able to do, considering, like you said, it was IMAX for like a day. Just incredible. Like there's a shot of just Palm Clementieff's like full abs just on IMAX, and we were just like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah, I tried. Yeah, it was incredible. Mm-hmm. Now, I think I'm going to switch gears a little bit here.
Okay. Yeah. Should we introduce the podcast?
Oh yeah, this is a podcast.
We're 30 minutes in, and I'm like, oh, yeah. Does this have any structure?
We haven't introduced it all.
We rarely introduce it anyway.
Yeah, but we probably should have.
Takes are back, and structure will be introduced the plot.
It'll work itself out. But you are listening to Cue the Banter, a podcast about movies and television.
Mm.
I am your co-host, Nick.
And I am Jared.
I mean, come on. We nailed it.
Also co-host.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole idea behind it is we add things to each other's queue. We get on here. We talk about it. We let the banter ensue. We're going to get back into that. We're going to actually do what the podcast was meant to do. We wrote it on the board.
It's on the board. You know, it's written down. It's not in pencil.
No. I markered that fucker in. So we got that. So we've covered Barbenheimer, we've covered Mission Impossible, MCU not doing so hot right now.
Struggling. It's a rough time.
I mean, superhero movies really don't seem like they're doing too much right now.
No,
the like Flash came and went like a flash in the pan.
Ooh, nice.
Nailed it.
You'd be right. Yeah, you should be right. You should be like a newspaper headline writer the 60s.
Let me go ahead and write that down.
I just like, because the thing is, you said flash in the pan, and I just, you know what image was in my head?
What?
A spinning newspaper onto the screen.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Not doing so hot. And I can attest to that because I haven't fucking seen them. Nice. I was watching like all of them. You know what I mean? Like I'm a big defender of the Snyder Cut. All right.
You're a big defender. You're a defender of this of the Snyder Cut. I don't know if I would call you a big defender of the Snyder Cut.
People go, it's relative. Not good. I go, pretty good.
It has its stuff.
You just have to let Zack Snyder make 7-hour movies.
He's got another one. And so the thing is, he's
Rebel Moon.
Rebel Moon. So the concept behind Rebel Moon was Zack Snyder said, "Hey, can I make a Star Wars movie?" And they were like, "Eh." So he's like, "All right, I'm gonna make my own version." And I think it's two parts.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so it's one movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. That's what I'm saying here. Not doing so hot.
I'm trying to look at the superhero movies that came out in 2023.
I feel like it's a lot of fatigue. There's definitely some fatigue there. And I also think that I saw an article right before we got on that was like Disney's like, oh, for the future, we're going to pick quality over quantity. And it's like, you fucked yourselves by just fucking putting shit out. Like, I didn't watch a new Disney or MCU thing for, 6 months. And I was fucking 3 movies and 5 different series behind. Come on.
So they should have taken a longer break after Endgame.
Yep.
I mean, something came out shortly after. That's the Sony thing. It was Spider-Man. But like after that, they were honestly given an opportunity with COVID. Like they didn't release a movie in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
They released 3 shows, and that's another thing. Disney Plus thing of it all is now people go into a movie and be like, oh, so I need to have seen 10 episodes of a show on Disney Plus for me to kind of. I mean, and you don't need to. Like, I didn't
you don't
finish
have to,
watching,
but
Marvel
it's still there. You still got to pay for a streaming service to watch a show.
Yeah,
to be fully caught up on a movie, like
because what we're also finding out, it's not just superhero movies that are struggling. Disney just put out an animated movie that's not tracking to do well. Because, what animated movies has Disney put out in theaters recently? I remember Turning Red, which is a good movie a couple years ago. That went straight to streaming. Like, a couple things were in theaters, but a lot of times, it's just going to be on streaming and it's going to be on...
It'll be on Disney Plus. It allows people to be lazy. And the whole thing with that is, it's like, I can either pay $10 a month and the whole family can watch this, or I can pay $18 a ticket and we can go to the movie theater and watch it. And I feel like that factors into people's decisions.
Yeah.
I don't know. You've made it. It's an ongoing battle. It's going to go back and forth between home media and going to the fucking theater.
Yeah. And I get it. Like if you're a parent and it's like, I gotta bring 3 kids to the movie theater and chaperone that.
They're gonna want popcorn.
They can come over, make some food, order some food, and we can watch it on the TV.
Yeah.
That, especially with animated movies. But also it is the quantity thing, but I'd argue, and I have to look at the numbers, but the 2 good that I would argue superhero movies that came out this year were Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse
mm-hmm.
and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Makes sense.
I don't know where they land on success meter. I'll take a look at the 2023 box office to see where they land, but the quality of those movies were good and people went and saw them. So if you're going to put out a movie, but the thing is it's word of mouth does help. Okay. The Guardians movie. Oh, Guardians is good. People are going to go see it. And it's the 4th highest. Yeah. So you got Barbie, Super Mario Bros, Oppenheimer, Guardians Volume 3 at 4 and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse at 6. There's a correlation there. Those are the 2 that were good. You know, you have Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, which was is down at 10. But granted, that was still kind of like, yeah, people were getting fatigued by it. But it was like, okay, but here's like the main villain is going to be in this. And that's another thing that kind of fucked them. They're like, hey, you know what? What if we put your main villain in a shitty Ant-Man movie where he loses to Ant-Man? No offense to Ant-Man, but how is that going to build you towards... Like, could you imagine Thanos showed up and a version of Thanos showed up and got the piss beat out of him by Ant-Man? Would you be terrified of that as a villain going forward?
No, that's what I mean, too. It's like, I don't need a third Ant-Man movie.
No.
I don't need
Paul Rudd. I like Paul Rudd a lot. So do I. Even at, like in Endgame, he's one of the top performances in that movie. He's so good. But yeah, like he is more of a side character. And I understand him. He's one of the senior statesmen now in the MCU. So I understand him wanting to get the big movie, but it just doesn't make sense. You see, recently he like was talking about his diet while he was on it, while working on Ant-Man. It's like, why was that his diet? He wears a suit and gets big and small.
That's what I mean. It's like, I just think they were like just throwing a bunch of shit at you, hoping something sticks. Yeah, they made things of quality, but because of how overwhelming everything is, it's like, I'm not paying attention to this.
No.
And I feel like that's, you know, it's fucking quick fatigue, but that's how it is. Like, oh, we can make money off of this? Fucking cool. Let's go. Here's a Morbius movie, and you're like, what?
Right. The thing is with this sort of thing, like the fatigue and like in the cycle of things, it happens before you can't anticipate it happening. You're like, oh, we're declining. Like it normally happens. And then all of a sudden you're like, well, shit, no one wants to see this anymore.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to regroup and figure out. I mean, right now, like I haven't watched all the shows. I have seen all the movies.
I'm behind on movies.
Like for me, it was like going into the year, like, oh, Loki, I kind of want to see how it ended.
I'll watch that. Like Guardians, I'm going to watch. I'll probably watch the second season of Loki.
But that's, at that point now, it's like, I don't know what's next. I don't care. Like they're probably going to announce Fantastic Four or like the X-Men are going to show up. And like,
what about you're just going to push Deadpool 3 to the side?
Yeah, apparently Deadpool 3, according to a report, Deadpool 3 and then a couple of, I think that's going to be the setting up what happens next, which, okay.
In a Deadpool movie?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hugh Jackman's in it as Wolverine, so they're probably going to try and incorporate some sort of X-Men stuff to it. But what's the play here? Like, because they should cast new X-Men, right? And I think they're going to. I don't think Hugh Jackman's going to be the MCU's main Wolverine.
Yeah.
It's the jingly keys thing. It's like, oh, look who we got. We got this actor to be in this thing. And it's the nostalgia thing. Like, have you went and rewatched No Way Home again?
No.
Neither have I. By all accounts, it doesn't work as well on the second watch. And there's like pauses where it's like, oh, this was kind of just a second pause for audience applause.
Yeah. I don't have the answer on like what would make me interested again. You know what I mean? And that's where I'm like,
For me, it's mostly just been obligation. But like now that I've finished Loki and the Guardians has finished, and it's like I kind of part of me wish, like, because I'm thinking back and I'm like, oh, I should have just stopped watching after Endgame. But there was nothing. There wasn't stuff that I liked and enjoyed since then. But like I was like, I should just do a clean break here. But I did want to close out the Guardians trilogy.
Well, I think also part of it could be like in the end, everything ends up being like a CGI slosh fest. You know what I mean? And it's like, no matter what you do, you're still filming in a parking lot in Atlanta with blue screens around. And I think that's part of it. And someone brought up the other day, it was like, this is a clip from At World's End. You're like, this movie came out in 2007.
Yeah. It looks incredible.
Look at what this fucking movie looks like.
Uh-huh.
Like, look at Davy Jones. That movie isn't, it's the final fight scene. It's CGI. Like,
if it came out today, we would consider it, this is the best CGI.
And the Maelstrom scene, but it's also about, like, you feel like you can tell the space. Like, I'm thinking of them on the boat at the end of At World's End, which has the greatest kiss in the history of cinema in it. And... hey, you may kiss the, just kiss. And the camera spins around in a circle. And it spins. It's the greatest kiss in the history of cinema. Yeah. That's my take, okay? Right? The camera spins around as the boat is blown to shreds and bodies are flying over it. And you're like, how can they top this? And then the greatest death in the history of cinema, it follows there shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something so impressive about it. That, you know, when you really look at it, you're like, oh, these MCU movies are going to look like kind of washed out and kind of like this. And you're like, I remember being like, whatever. Okay, I get it. They look gray. I don't need you to color grade it and show me why it looks gray. But now when I watch it, I'm like, hey, maybe this isn't as interesting because it's gray.
Because you don't care about the characters anymore.
Yeah, people, I'm like, whatever.
Like, they haven't won you over with like the current character. So now all that other stuff that was always evident in most of these movies, now that comes more to the forefront because the other stuff isn't distracting you from it. The story isn't as good, the plotting, everything, all the world building that they're trying to, or you know, the story building that they're trying to build towards. And there were hiccups, you know, that it's not the biggest debate, but there is, like, people were like, wow, like they had it all planned out. It's like, no, they utilized what they had built up and like were able to, you know, complete the loop like very effectively. But it's not like they planned out the like end game from the beginning. They didn't.
No.
There was hiccups. Like, so like there's still a chance that maybe they figured out, but right now it's just too convoluted and messy. And it doesn't feel like they know where they're going. They have the Jonathan Majors issue.
I mean, there's a bunch of different multiverses. Just like cast someone else.
Yeah, it should be easy.
Pretty simple.
Super.
The Hulk's not the same guy he was, and he had his own movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Just
like,
it's do it.
It'll be fine.
Yeah. But the gray that you say, like, it's crazy that it's just such a thing now where it's like, oh yeah, like the MCU movies kind of look washed out and kind of gray. Like, look at comic books. Some of the most colorful things is why the Spider-Verse movies are so cool, is because it looks like it's bursting with life where the screen is, because they want it to all have the same look. You know, all these movies have to have the same look. They got to like feel like they're all part of the same universe, which I've always like pushed up against. I don't think that like if Deadpool had different, or like Doctor Strange had a different look to it, it would take me out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to do a hard pivot here.
Okay, here we go. Let's see. I'm ready.
I have not been. You have. Killers of the Flower Moon.
Not the hardest pivot. Those two have been in conversation.
They're kind of connected.
Yeah.
Scorsese.
Mm-hmm.
You think this is finally going to be his big break, or what's the deal?
Wait,
this might put this kid on the map.
Yeah, like maybe he'll get Kang Dynasty or Secret Wars after.
I mean, so how was your Killers of the Flower Moon experience?
I mean, it was incredible. It's another. I mean, it's 3 hours and 20 minutes. Granted, it came out of Oppenheimer and that thing flew. It doesn't fly the way Oppenheimer does, and it's even longer, but I never really felt like, oh, this is straining. It's super long.
Okay.
It's an incredible Scorsese movie. and like the performances, like, and it's another year where it's like, oh, is this like Leonardo DiCaprio's best performance of his career? Mm-hmm. But also simultaneously, it's like he's the third best in the movie.
Okay.
I really like Lily Gladstone's incredible. I loved Robert De Niro's performance. That guy can turn it on. That guy makes a lot of movies that are absolute shit now because the guy likes money. But it almost enriches the performance for me. Whereas like, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of these De Niro movies, but I see the trailers. Uh-huh. Like, that looks terrible.
Yeah.
And then he comes in and it's like, damn, but he can turn it on. This guy still got it. And it's like a quietly terrifying performance too.
And now that movie will be released on Apple.
Yes.
Shortly.
Mm-hmm. The only streaming service really doing it right.
Apple?
Yeah, because what they do is they get the rights to it, right? It's an Apple movie, and then they sell it to a distributor or to put it in theaters. So it has an actual extended run, which Netflix doesn't do. And then they get it. It's on their site. It's theirs. Like,
yeah. Because I'll watch it as soon as it's on there. Like, yeah. That's no problem. Okay. We're moving along here.
Okay.
All right. So you said that people should add Killers of the Flower Moon to their queue. And if I'm understanding this correctly, you're saying Robert De Niro, pretty good at acting.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So let me just
take your notes.
Yeah. Put a couple checks down in the take column.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump around here.
Okay.
How about we move to Wile E. Coyote?
Okay. See, that's another, it was a recent news story that just, it feels like it was happened 10 years ago.
It was ages ago.
Yeah.
Well, as we know, Batgirl, a movie that was famously completed,
mm-hmm.
Warner Brothers shelved.
Yeah.
They wrote it off.
Mm-hmm.
Tax purposes. It's done. It will never see the light of day. And that was a weird. Mm-hmm. That was one of those things where, like, I assume there's movies that are made that don't come out for various reasons.
Right. Or even like, but movies come out and it's like, oh yeah, this movie was filmed 7 years ago.
Yeah. So this whole thing with the whole thing with Batgirl was just strange. Cause it was like, it was done. It was done. And like Keaton was back as Batman. Like there was all these things attached and they were just like, yeah. And that kind of started this discussion on like, you shouldn't be able to do that. Like that shouldn't be allowed. Yeah. Even if the movie fucking sucks, it doesn't matter. And it's that whole thing now you're talking about, like how we value art and what it is. You're like, this is art that was made that just for a tax write-off. It's like,
yeah,
it's bullshit. So that happened with Batgirl. So that wasn't that long ago. So I think that this whole, the whole idea of that is fresh on people's minds. Mm-hmm. Then we come out of the strike and Warner Brothers does it with a live action Wile E. Coyote movie. Right? The movie is done and it's shelved. But I think the response here was what was so impressive about it is people immediately were like, no, fuck this. They're like, this is bullshit. You shouldn't be able to do that. You shouldn't be allowed to do that shit. And I also saw a lot of people say, I feel like what the difference now and pre-strike was is people learn sometimes through things like a labor action or a strike, like, oh, I can speak up on something. Like, I have a voice in this. Like, fuck this. I'm not going to roll over. So you saw some of the people that work on the film, like, releasing footage.
Right.
Of how they shot stuff and practical effects to look like the old Wile E. Coyote cartoons. And it was just like it garnered all this attention. And it's the kind of thing of like bullying on the internet works because now Warner Brothers is looking for a distributor or looking to sell the film.
Right.
So it's not just going to be a write-off. They've reversed course on it. But it puts us in this weird thing now where it's like people, they're just going to make stuff and take it away. So there's that. But then I think also we have the conversations going on about physical media now as well. Things that have already been released. And it was what Nolan said with there is a danger these days that if things only exist in the streaming version, they do get taken down. They come and go. To which Guillermo del Toro said, physical media is almost a Fahrenheit 451, where people memorized entire books and thus became the book they loved level of responsibility. If you own a great 4K, HD, Blu-ray, DVD, et cetera, of a film or films you love, you are the custodian of those films for generations to come. Mm-hmm. Which is, I really love that quote about like being the custodian of those films for generations to come. And you look at like your DVD collection and it's like, what about Bob?
Right.
Is in there and you're like, this is Due Date starring Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis. And I am the custodian of this film for generations to come. But it brings up that.
Do you own Due Date on physical?
Fuck yeah, I do.
That's got to be the first time anyone's ever said, fuck yeah, I do, asking if they owned Due Date.
Well, because the thing that makes it even more ironic now is I've owned that movie on Blu-ray like since it came out.
Right.
And the hospital, you know, my hospital I represent, where you're just on strike, is that's the location where they're trying to get to for the due date is fucking Providence, right. St. Joe's in Burbank.
Yeah. Yeah. Pawnee Medical Center.
Also Pawnee, baby. With this whole idea of it's like we can have things that are out there, and if you don't know, you know, streaming's great, it's great, it's great. Go watch Westworld. You can, unless you purchase. Like, you know what I mean? That whole thing of streaming was like, oh, their whole library's on here. And now things are slowly disappearing. Even Looney Tunes shit that's on there, because they have all the old Looney Tunes cartoons, are going to be gone at some point in December. I don't know where they're going. But it's this idea.
Did they draw back on that? I think I saw, because there was the report that they didn't. Or that they were taking them off, and then shortly after there was backlash, and shortly after it was like they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's that kind of thing. It's like, oh, you can curate not just what is made, but you get to curate what I'm actually able to watch. Yeah. And I think that part's, I think it's fucking crazy.
Yeah,
is they can be like, oh, never mind, it's off streaming today, and it's like, oh, well, where can you find this? And it's like nowhere. Sorry. It's not available. And it's like, well, I don't understand. Like, that's hard for me to grasp that that's a thing that can happen.
Like, if the internet ceased to exist, if there was some sort of event that caused the internet to just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
How you watching Mank?
Is what I'm saying. I've seen a lot of Mank hate lately. I'll tell you that much. It's not appreciated.
People, I mean, look, I watched Mank. So I watched Mank the other night.
Yeah.
After I watched Oppenheimer.
Okay.
I was watching Oppenheimer and there was the black and white scenes and I was like, holy shit.
I probably should throw Mank on.
Okay. I'm gonna watch Mank. So I think Oppenheimer, so far in my life, is only a movie that has been viewed with another movie. So I did Mankenheimer the other night.
Okay. How was Mank on this? Second viewing?
Yeah, second viewing. Good.
Okay.
Mank.
Yeah, come on.
Like, again, Mank. And I've heard, you know, the blank check guys are talking about Fincher right now. So like that's probably where a lot of the takes are coming from, because it's just a lot of people are rewatching that shit. And a point that was made, because like Fincher has another movie on Netflix now, The Killer, and it was like they brought up the fact that it was like these two movies that Fincher's done for Netflix are like they're meant to be seen in a theater. Like, you know, obviously he's like I got the money from Netflix, so I'm able to make these movies, but like they belong in a theater. There's the echoey sound to make it sound like an old movie.
I love that shit in fucking Mank, dude.
like the killer's a lot of internal stuff with monologues and stuff like that. And, like, you're kind of meant to lock in. Like, if you watch, like, if you, here's my advice to you: if you're gonna watch The Killer at Home, you gotta like throw your phone out the window. You gotta put it in the other room. Just gotta be like locked in. You gotta be locked in for that movie. Mank holds up.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. I maybe didn't like it as much the second. I mean, I just, you know, I was like, no, this is good. This is pretty much as good as I remember. Mank.
So, I mean, that's what I mean. Herman Mankiewicz. Yeah. So I think with the Egyptian theater now being open again, owned by Netflix, is hopefully that the movies that go straight to Netflix have a longer release schedule, or at least somewhere you're able to go see them.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
Just put it in theaters for 2 months and then throw it on your streaming service. Like, I don't care. But like the 1 week, like with, we had it with Glass Onion. Like, it was in theaters, and I made sure I went to see it in the theater because I remember how much I liked seeing Knives Out in the theater.
Good theater movie.
Yeah. So I was like, I made sure I saw it the week it was in, but it was like, just a week? It's going to be out for a week?
Yeah, it's not enough time.
No. And it's like, people can wait. Like, what are we used to wait? Like, we, like this Oppenheimer, the Oppenheimer release.
Feels like then what the normal was.
What it was. That's how, and that's like fine because it built, like, it builds up anticipation. So much in, and then I was so excited. I bought it the night it came out.
Yeah, I fucked up on that part, so now I gotta wait.
Yeah, but like,
once I got it, I'm watching it.
Yeah, that excitement was there. It's like, I can't wait to watch that again. Where it's like, oh, it's on the streaming service, and then they put it on there, and then you don't think about it for a while, and then all of a sudden the movie's like, oh, you know, like, oh yeah, yeah, it's on Paramount. I can't tell many times I've watched a movie, and then like, oh, I couldn't finish it, and then I went back like a week or two later, and the movie was no longer on the streaming service.
That's what I mean. It's like fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
It's fucking bullshit. There's no other way to put it. It's just like fucking put it on there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's more or less to the whole idea of it's like, oh, yeah, no, you're really, you know, I don't know. It's like fucking get it. Like, I don't know. They don't know what they're doing. And I feel like everything they're doing isn't helping. They're making shit worse.
Yeah.
Shit's fucking bad enough. We don't need you to make it worse by making it so that I can't watch season 3 of Westworld. I don't know. I gave up after.
I mean, I get it. I understand because Westworld's not on. Season 3 of Westworld was a weird hill for you.
It's the only thing I can think of that was definitely not on there.
That's what's, yeah, it's weird. It's because, like, that's especially with television shows, the shows that I love, I'm like, okay, time to just go back and rewatch it.
Yeah, it's like, I'm paying for the service. Now you take it off. Now I got to go fucking buy it.
Yeah.
And then who knows if I go to buy it if it's even fucking available. You know what I mean? Like, that's the other problem you run into. You ever seen Mank in the store?
No, because there's no physical copy.
That's what I mean. Like, that's the problem there. It's not good.
No. Like, now I feel like, nowadays, I feel like it's more of an announcement when it's like, oh, yeah, remember that movie that you saw last year? It's getting a physical release. It's like, okay, that used to not be news. That used to be
the thing they did.
The thing that happened.
They used to release it physically.
Yeah.
So we're on Netflix. By the way, I'm trying this thing out a little bit right now as we're on the show here, right? I'm trying this new format out. Which is like, we can like have an hour 20 minute episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm trying it a little bit. And I mean, I think we're, how are you feeling right now? It feels good to be back. This feels like we're back and like we're going somewhere.
Right. I think, look, like, as we always do on the show, we kind of stumble through the first 30 minutes. Then we kind of get a groove and then we're like, just having conversation. Now, granted, like, this episode shouldn't be another hour long. It should be probably another 20 minutes because I don't really know what else. Because I don't even know. Look, I've seen the list. I've seen the list of what we're talking about. You're looking at it right now.
I got it.
You're going through points. Okay, this is what's next.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of along for the ride.
So, but,
yeah. It's like a tune-up. We're like tuning back up to just get back into the actual show.
So I also think something, you know, important to bring up here is when we talk about buying physical media. It's the other night I'm sitting here. It's the day after Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. You're sitting next to me. And you're like, Fugitive. It's coming out on 4K. And I was like, all right. So I bought it immediately. Yeah. It got delivered the next day. We watched it the other night. Kate's first time seeing it.
Really?
Yeah, I said, huh? Dr. Richard Kimball? What do you think?
And a beard?
And she, come on.
Prison jumpsuit?
It was a one-armed man. And she goes, no. She goes, I liked it. I go, you actually liked it? You're not just fucking telling me that because I wanted you to watch. She said, no. She goes, I liked it. She goes, I will say this. I go, okay. She goes, it feels like a movie that should be on some, like, channel for like, oh, the TNT Sunday Night Movie. She goes, yeah, exactly. I said, you're goddamn right. It is. That's it. That's one of the top ones, Academy Award winning.
Did you tell? Yeah. What was her reaction? Like, did you know that Tommy Lee Jones won an Academy Award for this performance?
Yeah. And we were kind of talking about that a little bit. And it's like, they don't give Oscars to shit like that anymore.
No, I feel like the closest thing. But it's like it wouldn't even I wouldn't even qualify it as like Heath Ledger for the Joker being like that's such an extreme example.
Yeah, no, but that's what I mean. It's like, where do you get these? Like,
another thing would have been like, I remember like Javier Bardem in Skyfall. People were talking about it going in.
Yep.
He never got nominated or whatever. But like he wouldn't. But now, like, even if he got nominated, he wouldn't have won. What was the competition that year? What year was
Have fun.
Best supporting actor. I can just go to the Wikipedia page for best supporting actor.
I saw it the other day.
Are you saying like have fun? Remember when K-Hu Kwan won an Academy Award? He's on the new season of Loki. He's quite good. He's a lot of fun.
Jared. All
right. What year is it?
Bro, it is crazy.
All right, I'm in 1980.
Are you ready for this, Chair?
Yeah.
The support. You ready? I mean, look, let me just tell you this. Let me tell you what the supporting actor race was this year. Mm-hmm. Pete Postlethwaite for In the Name of the Father.
Okay.
This is interesting.
Okay.
This is very interesting, right? We got Stockard Channing and We got Ray Fiennes in Schindler's List.
No way.
Right? One of the most terrifying performances.
No
ever.
Way.
Hold on. Leonardo DiCaprio for What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Oh my God.
Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive. And also John Malkovich for In the Line of Fire. And I was going to say, yeah, it's like that weird thing where they also nominated Malkovich for In the Line of Fire for, like, he's like the villain in the same kind of movie. And they're nominated the same fucking year.
Yeah. Wow. In the Line of Fire and then in the Name of the Fire, In the Name of the Father are very similar names for movies.
Crazy. Let's, you know, that's I
think something that we've talked about doing is, you know, going back to old Oscars and relitigating what we think the winners were.
You talking Ray Fiennes? You're going to go, they saw that and we're like, hey, he's okay. Hey, we're going to give it to Tommy Lee Jones.
But Tommy Lee Jones is my second pick from that list, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah. But I can't really say that. I've only seen two of the movies, which would be Schindler's List and The Fugitive. I haven't seen the other ones.
You've never seen What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
No, I never. The thing is, I was just like, do I really want to know? Do I really want to know what's eating them? No,
I saw it forever ago.
Add it to my queue if it's that.
Yeah, how movies go. You're like, I saw the movie 10 years ago. I enjoyed it. And I was like, you saw it 10 years ago and enjoyed it? Have you tried it now through the modern lens? And it's like, all right, buddy.
Oh, boy.
NYU called. You know what I mean?
You tried it through the modern
They want their fucking lens. Barista back.
Oh, my what? God. That's crazy.
No? It was like a good joke, because the joke wasn't that he was a barista. It was that he doesn't even go to NYU. He just works at the coffee shop there.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Anyway.
He's a janitor. he's a janitor, and he walked and he saw a board, and it was the best supporting actor nominees.
Yeah, that's what it was. The Maki, Ricky, Tommy, Davy, Timmy, Tommy, Timmy, Tommy. Shout out to Boston. So we're talking about streaming. We're talking about Netflix. So let's go ahead real quick. Let's talk about Stranger Things season 5, the death of Will Byers. What is going on?
So, for the sake of probably not getting too much into the stuff surrounding Noah Schnapp right now, I will say he was just added. He was on the the Forbes 30 under 30.
Yeah, the funniest tweet I saw was 30 under 30. He's not even the 30th best character on the show he's on.
I saw someone, there was a list of 9 people, and they congratulated 8. Like, congratulations to the, and then listed the names again, and his was the one that was missing.
I think what's really fascinating with him right now is, well, number one, there was a lot of questions when it was Stranger Things is delayed, and you're like, these kids were infants in season 1 and 25 by the start of season 3. Like, we don't have time. You got to start pumping these things out quick. And you're like, right, what are they going to do? That's what I'm saying. They're going to get there.
Then the strike.
Right? Yeah, it's going to be crazy. And so you're like, okay. So, you think about that for 5 seconds. And then you're like, all right, no one's thinking about Stranger Things right now. I don't think that was something that was on people's minds. And Will Byers, decided that, let me make a couple of videos on Instagram where I have Zionism is sexy stickers. And he was like, that's definitely... it's probably my only option at this point. It's probably the only career thing I could do right now. And it's so fucking weird. Because this is not even I can't even think of you've seen the shit that fucking, Amy Schumer's saying and you're like, this person just took it to the whole thing. Zionism, that's good. That's definitely the good in this situation here. Me as Will Byers, me Noah Schnapp, me as the fucking bowl cut fucking dweeb, no offense, is like, this is my new...
That's kind of the point.
You're like, this is my new brand. That's it. That's my new brand. He didn't even go hey, what are you supposed to, you can't defend yourself against terrorists. He didn't even take one of those
Well, he made a post. He made one of those long worded posts about I'm, saddened by this. And then it was all the other stuff. It's like, well, what was the first post then?
That's what I mean. And you're like, what's going on here? And, I think it's definitely been it's like a weird, to see the reaction of everything that's going on here. And you've seen those things of I'm saddened by what's happening and lives lost on both and blah, blah, blah. It's always the same thing. You know what I mean? We're at a point now where ceasefire is a bad word. You know what I mean? It's like people are getting kicked out of fucking Harvard and shit.
Right.
And it's just so crazy to go to that extent of Zionism sexy. That's it. That's my new brand. And they're like, we're not just going to kill Will Byers, the easiest character to kill ever. Ever. Name one character easier to kill than him.
On that show?
No, in general.
Yeah, I mean,
he's half dead. He's been puking slugs since the end of season 2. You put Will Byers up in a fight against Jonathan Lipnicki from fucking Jerry Maguire. Jonathan Lipnicki's taking him down. That kid does nothing but walk around and talk about the human head weighing 8 pounds. So I think that shit is fucking fascinating. And when you bring it to the point of where you're like, hey, maybe like settling on other people's land and taking it over and putting them into a small area and then just bombing them and committing atrocities over and over and over and over again, like in the public eye, and you're doing all this here, you figured maybe that if you posted like, we should, like, they're bombing hospitals. Like, you point that out now, people are losing their fucking jobs over that shit.
Well, that's the thing. He posted his stuff. Nothing happened, right? He's not going to, we're not going to kill him off. He's going to be on the show. He's on the Forbes, whatever list. Obviously, not all of that's connected. But, and then you have the actress from Scream support the other side. Boom. Hey, she's not coming back.
That's what I mean. And you're like, what? You're like, what, like, is.
Yeah, Susan Sarandon was at a Free Palestine rally, and she was dropped by her agent. Like I'm struggling. I can't remember the name of the actress in Scream. I want to get it, pull it up so I can, like, properly.
But I think that's part,
but, like, that's a smaller, like, actor. Yeah, Susan Sarandon. Like, people know Susan Sarandon, Academy Award winning actress.
Pretty
Susan
well known.
Sarandon. Yeah,
and that's what I mean. Is it's like. You're like, maybe you shouldn't, like, keep a people completely oppressed under the, like, look, the whole shit of, like, Israel's like, we're going to release a statement in English after cutting off all communication to Palestine, and we're going to be like, hey, you guys should probably leave, and then act like that's, like, wasn't some posturing and setting themselves up. Like, you can't call that, you say that, it's like, whoa, buddy, you're done, we're out. But then the other side is like, no, like, Zionism, like, that's a good thing. Kicking people out of their homes, that's awesome. And they're like, yeah, what are we going to do? Like, kill them? Got to bring them back. And
we will buyers.
Yeah, you're like, hey, don't, like, stop bombing hospitals. And they're like, oh, so you're cool with terrorism? And it's like, what are you talking about? So seeing all these takes here on this of, like, at least you're making it well known that you're on the wrong side of history here. But then, like you said, the Scream thing, were what was the statement?
Let's see. It was Melissa Barrera, to get the name correct. Let me see what her actual post was. I've been actively looking for videos and information about the Palestinian side for the last 2 weeks or so, following accounts, etc. Why? Because Western media only shows the other side. I will let you deduce for yourself. Usually the algorithm on social media gets the gist. Well, my discovery IG will only show me videos showing and talking about the Israeli side. Censorship is very real. So then they cited it. It was like, oh, we have zero tolerance for anti-Semitism. Or the incitement of hate in any form. Basically, like, floated an.
We did the thing where.
So her coverage floated an anti-Semitic trope that Jews control the media. So what did they do? They fired her from her show. I'm not saying, like, oh, I'm not getting into the whole thing, the Jews control the media, but it's like. What message does that send?
Western media is also a controlled narrative. Like, we all know that.
What message does that send? Like, she, like, we're posted all, like, this and you fired her because she because
that's
she reported,
I mean,
that
and
there's control on the media.
And but then again, that's, I think, the thing with it too, is you have people where it's like, hey, we should stop, like, massacring, like, we should stop doing genocide to Palestinians. They're innocent. And it's like, oh, congratulations on your anti-Semitism. And you're like, I didn't say anything anti-Semitic at all. But that's to the point there where I feel like it's like, you know, the second you humanize Palestine, that's where it gets you. And that's where this whole mess is. So the other thing to bring it back to Mission Impossible was you saw the reports of Tom Cruise's agent.
What? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, no. You saw the report of Tom Cruise's agent, right? And so now they're going to remove her from the board, right? So apparently Tom Cruise goes into the office. Yeah, he says, fuck it. Yeah. He shows up to support her. And I think that it's one of those things that someone brought up. They go, I think also part of this is to realize that that's how big Tom Cruise is. Because you get people left and right that are getting, like, people like, fuck them. They're getting removed from shows, fired from this. They're like, he showed up and was like, nope, I'm supporting her. And where's the backlash? It's not there. It's not there the same. But I think that when the landscape turns to like the way it is, where it's like you're like, hey, I looked at the other side. And that's not even like, oh no, I did my own research. Like looking outside of what you're being spoon fed and then being fired over it, you're like, oh boy, this is that's not controlling a narrative. Right. You know what I mean? Like it, and that's kind of this like weird spot. It gets us in, and I think it brings me to the whole, you know, do you remember the big Oppenheimer discussion was not showing the bombs dropping.
Right, showing the Japanese perspective.
Correct. And there was a kind of conversation on that. And I think that recently the way events, whether they be protests, whether they be attacks, whatever it may be, the way they're covered and portrayed in different kinds of media is suited, I think, extremely important. And I know that with Oppenheimer, we're talking about, you know, obviously something that actually happened, but we're talking about the way it's viewed in the movie, and it's like, that wasn't the story there. That was, you know, glanced over. We don't need to see that, you know, when I look at what's going on, you have the footage you're getting from the ground in the Gaza Strip. It's just like, oh no, this is just constantly nothing but the worst things I've ever seen happen to humans in my entire life, over and over again, every single day. And there's a way that that's portrayed. And it's, you know, that's portrayed a certain way to fit a certain narrative somewhere. But then I think it even goes to when I think of the protests going on through COVID, and the way that those were covered, and it was always so important to document these protests. Like, that's the point of this. Like, so when you go and you look at, you see now, you go, well, look at this atrocity that was committed against the people in Gaza. Look at this. Here's this footage. Here's what's happening on the ground here. They're not going to tell you that this is what's happening, but this is what it looks like. This is what the death, the destruction looks like. Well, I think it's also weird when you look at, we'll say the protests after Derek Chauvin killed George Floyd was, hey, if you're going to go out there, make sure you have a mask on. Don't wear any identifying jewelry. Mm-hmm. Don't do this. Don't do that. And that, I think, also gets us to this weird AI thing that the strikes cause so much, because they're like, they're going to have facial recognition. It's important to cover these things that are happening, but it's gotten to a point now where covering it the right way can be to the detriment of the people that are participating in whatever that action is. You know what I mean? They're going to, people found, ended up in jail because they're like, oh, this person, look at this shirt. It's custom made from this Etsy shop. So from this here and a list of, That's crazy. I know that I just went a lot of different places with that, but I think it all deals with who's putting out shit that you can watch, what they want you to see, the perspective it's being shown from, and how coverage of these important moments change throughout time based on different things that you never would have thought of. And I think that, you know, I wonder where the portrayal of what's happening right now will be in the history of movies and the history of cinema and what direction it's going and you know, what documentaries you're going to get put out from who and where. But I think also, like, once again, on one end, we're sitting here and we're like, I can't believe I can't see Batgirl, and they tried to make it so I couldn't see the Wile E. Coyote movie. And it's like, how many other forms of things will they try and, like, dictate that this is what you see.
Right.
It covers everything we talked about. You know what I mean? Like, it's that's kind and of like, the big thing. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like, I mean, and like what you like, said I with mean, right? like Oppenheimer and to a further extent, which we didn't really get into with Killers of the Flower Moon. It's like, who is telling, who is telling the stories?
Telling the story.
And not to criticize those movies, because like I, you know, I land on the side of, oh, I think those movies were made by filmmakers who made it only the way that they could. I didn't want to see, more of the Native American perspective from Martin Scorsese. I would like to see it from someone else in a different movie, or
thing with absolutely. Oppenheimer.
I didn't want to see the Japanese perspective from Christopher Nolan. I'd rather see it from someone else, but I like the story that they told from their perspective with the power that they have to make those movies, and with their cachet and just also with their, you know, the ability that they have, they're great at making, Christopher Nolan's great at making a Christopher Nolan movie, and Oppenheimer was a great version of that. And Killers of the Flower Moon was a great version of a Martin Scorsese movie. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what sort of responses we get because of how big, say, like Oppenheimer was. Do we see something down the line from a Japanese filmmaker that is talking about it from a totally different angle?
Well, I think the thing is we talked about kind of movie trailers, and I told you about Godzilla Minus One, and it's like the creation of that character is like. Yeah. It is the nuclear bomb. Mm-hmm. Like that's, you know what I mean? Like that's the response of like dealing with that. And then you also get to a point too, where you're like, look at how much we like, that was like, oh, this is a, you know, a character based on the biggest suffering we've as, you know, as a people we've suffered. Mm-hmm. This is kind of reckoning with, this is our thing for that. America was like, we should definitely throw Anne Heche and Matthew Broderick in New York with this thing and just like, see what happens. And it's even that, it's kind of, it's like, this was like made, it doesn't matter what it is now, you're like the intention of this and what it represented, what it was made. And we're like, yeah, but we can make money with that. So like,
yeah, you want, yeah. And I think
come on over, Gene Reno is going to be in this thing. I'll tell you that much. Azaria's, you know what I mean? Azaria's like, come on.
Cooking.
Azaria, he's going to be in it. And it's just kind of crazy how you get there, and I, you know,
well, these sort of,
I think that's also like a
yeah,
little,
I mean, these sort of things also just inform, like, think about, and we talked about this over the holiday, about how much 9/11 informed movies, and what would Godzilla,
come on,
what would Godzilla have been like if they made it in 2002? You know, it would have been probably different.
Still taking place, like, yeah, like, but still taking place in New York, right? Like, not like the updated ones we have now.
Like,
okay,
it would have maybe come from a different place, not like, oh, let's just put this in New York, like, because it's a cold disaster movie, where it's like, no, like, you, like the horrors of 9/11, like, informed a movie like War of the Worlds, where you see him running away from the big alien, and you know, all the people are getting turned into dust. It was very reminiscent of
Dust.
Ground Zero. So like,
yeah, absolutely, of like, I don't know what's happening right now, like, what is this, what am I witnessing?
That's just, yeah, it's something, it's interesting to look at. I mean, with this conflict, we'll see what we get from that, what sort of movies come from it, because we're also now, we're like in the, it's like the first full year, kind of, that's what I refer to as like the first full year post-pandemic, really, that we have of movies, and like how that informs storytelling and what these stories are about. That's also going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's I mean, we couldn't guess what it was going to be.
I think there's going to be stuff like World Trade Center or whatever came out in 2005 or something like that. Like United 93 came out, what, 2006? Like these movies come out, they came out like 5 years after. 2006 for United 93.
Yeah, they come out quick.
Yeah, I mean, guaranteed there's someone in this.
But yeah. The other thing is I think we may see with, I think the difference here is that like Who's gonna let that be made?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, who's going to be like, yeah, this is the way to go here? Because people are like, hey, I looked and I saw that. It seems like what's happening is pretty bad. And they're like, you don't even get to star in the Scream movie anymore.
Right. There's
so who's really going to be like, yeah, we're going to okay these here? One final thing I'd like to do.
I think I know exactly what this is.
Oh, it's Mr. fucking...
No, go ahead.
All right, here we go.
It's the movie.
You see the screen?
Okay, yeah. Let's get some brevity to end the podcast. I didn't think we were going to be.
All right.
Oh my god, I need to.
So we got along the top. We got Marissa Tomei. Comedy. And released from 2000 to 2023. Down the other side, we got Pete Davidson, Ryan Gosling, and Robert Downey Jr. So Pete Davidson, Marissa Tomei, Pete Davidson comedy, and Pete Davidson 2000 to
2024. Okay, so I've got to say, King of Staten Island?
King of Staten Island? Right, like this has got to be.
Right, I don't actually know for sure if she's in that, but she's got to be, right? She might, is that 100%?
Okay.
I can't really see.
Yeah. So here's the other thing.
I can't really see the screen that well. But it's
okay. Okay. 96.6%.
Okay, so there's something else.
What the fuck? What other movies is Pete Davidson in?
So for 2002 to 2023?
It's 2000. All right,
we'll throw bodies down. Right, like I mean, that's
okay.
I would consider that more of like a horror thriller.
Well, it's released from 2000 to 2023. Now, what about comedy, starring Pete Davidson?
Starring Pete Davidson. Like, problem is, it's like King of Staten Island. I know for sure he's got to be in like an Apatow movie as like a smaller character.
Yeah.
I
can't think of what
I'm
fucking
struggling
movie.
To. Jeez. Yeah. Let's go back to that one. We got to go back to that one.
So Gosling and Marissa Tomei. Crazy, stupid.
Oh, right. Tomei is in that. I forgot about that.
75%. Okay. Gosling, comedy.
Go Nice Guys, right? Would you go Nice Guys?
Okay. Absolutely. And Gosling, 2000 to 2023.
Now, let's be smart about this, because we could...
Are you thinking only God
Forgives? Yeah, go with that one. That's really good. I'm thinking, like, we're going to get under 6.2% for this one. Let's
3.5.
go, baby.
Okay, Robert Downey Jr., Marissa Tomei.
Okay, go Spider-Man. You can go Spider-Man Homecoming?
Spider-Man?
No. Or Civil War. Like, she's in it. She's in Civil War. But she's also in Homecoming.
So you think we should do Civil War?
Captain America. Yeah, because I think it's just kind of, like, forgotten that she's in that. Whereas people are going to think of her, it's...
Okay.
What percentage we get? Probably pretty high.
Robert Downey, 19.9.
Okay, that's good for a Marvel movie, I'd say. Now we got
Robert Downey. Now we got
Let's
Robert
do it.
Downey
Let's go,
Jr.
Why don't we do it?
And comedy.
We gotta go due date. Talked about it on the episode.
All right. Let's see due date. 15.9, baby. Now what about Downey Jr. 2000 to 2023?
Kiss, kiss, bang, bang.
There we
go. Is that what you're hoping for? Is that what you're hoping I'd say?
I really like that guess. 4.6.
What else is Pete Davidson in? What are some comedies that have come out like recently? I've definitely seen him in. No, actually, I mean, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Is he in anything like?
Oh, he's.
What?
He's in the fuck. He's fucking in fucking the Suicide Squad.
Oh, he is in the Suicide Squad.
That would have been better for over here, I think. Though, are they going to consider that a comedy? It's pretty funny.
I mean, I think Bodies, Bodies, Bodies and the Suicide Squad are both kind of funny and also something else and genre. Yeah,
9.7, baby. The top 14.2% of players today.
See, I wish it showed you. Oh, Downey Jr. I wish it showed you what the lowest percentage was. I don't like that it shows you the most popular. I don't mind that. I would also like to see the least popular.
People had the hardest time with fucking Gosling and Tomei.
Really? People had the hardest time with Gosling and... Oh, Gosling and Tomei, specifically. I was like... Yeah.
That square was the hardest.
Because, yeah, I think people just forget that she's in Crazy Stupid Love. Because she goes on a date with Carell.
That's got to be the reason why.
What if we just chose our movies based on that? That's like our mini-series.
On the grid?
To cover all those movies. That'd be terrible. Oh, so what's next? For the show, not for this episode. Obviously, we're wrapping up.
Let's see. What? Maybe what we get into next. I'm looking at the board here.
What time is that? Or what? We're almost in December. We could do like a Christmas movie list episode. Or, I mean, that we can always just pop in whatever. We can also add to queue.
So some of the things we want to go on, we want to do more lists. I've enjoyed doing lists. So Christmas, that could be a list that we work on.
Right. It might not be the next episode. But
we also... No. We also would like to... do family game night. You know, we play all these movie games on here with Kate and Snow and Abby. Zach's journey, we got to catch up with him, man. We did a whole episode about him trying to get into movies, or we talked about it a lot. Now he's kind of moving. Might have been a mistake. He has some pretty bad takes.
Takes are back. Yeah, his takes. Brother Zach.
You know what I mean? So, like, we could see that. We're gonna get back to doing our adding movies to the queue. We're gonna talk about do some Oscar talk, if possible. Not everything has been, you know, the Screen Actors Guild has a tentative agreement. It hasn't fully been voted on yet. But if that is the case, when that goes through, I would like to reach out to one of the strike captains that I met when I was with my hospital across the street on a strike, just to kind of talk about, hey, where now?
Yeah.
You know, 115 days on strike, you know, what was that like? And then I think that there's a lot of questions people have on strikes and what it means and what it looks like. So I think that'd be a fun opportunity to not only talk about it and bring more attention to, you know, what was going on from people that were actually there every day. What their feelings are with the industry and the studios and everything going forward. So that's one we want to do. And then we would also like to work on doing watch-alongs.
Yeah, we got to figure that out. We got to do that.
So for the Twitch people, you know, you can do watch-alongs as long as it's on, I guess, Amazon Prime. I don't remember exactly how to do it, but either way, we'll figure that out. And we would like to do that series. We would like to watch bad sequels.
Yeah.
I mean, are they bad, though? Like, I'm talking about, hey, what's on the pod tonight? And it's like, Speed 2, Cruise Control. You know what I mean? What else? What else is a bad sequel? Grease 2, pretty bad.
You talked about The Fugitive. We can watch U.S. Marshals.
That's right. Yeah, that's what it is. U.S. Marshals. Yeah, we want to get something going like that where it's kind of, we'll do it in person. Jared will have a different setup. We'll do it in person and we'll just watch the movie. I'm excited. Like, I'm excited to get back to this. Like, it just feels right. Oscar season's coming along. I got a lot to catch up on. I'm going to do my best. I promise you that. But no, I'm looking forward to, instead of just us having to call each other, and I mean, instead of just us having to call each other and have a conversation, we're always like, this would be the podcast episode. Now we can actually do said episode. Get the cobwebs off. We're ready to go. So, I mean, the only place to go from here is up.
Take my friend back.
They're back. Cue the banter's back. Very excited about this.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
I'm very excited about this. I think, you know, we're fucking cooking. We're cooking now, dude. This is it. This is the future. So, as always, follow us everywhere. Twitter and TikTok are the main ones. I've been kind of cooking on TikTok lately.
I got to get back. I got to start posting more on TikTok.
You got to get on the TikTok. You know what I mean? I think it's good. There's a lot of stuff about movies on there. Very exciting. But, you know, I'm signing off. Remember, keep adding things to your queue and let the banter ensue. Jared, I'll turn it over to you if there's any final departing remarks you would like to make before the episode is complete.
Okay, so you stole the whole like catchphrase. Signing off. I'm Jared. I'm tired. I have to pick my wife up from the airport in an hour. Brutal. I guess I'll just go by with what my mug says. And it's a Dune. Face your fear. Also,
I love it. Dune's coming back.
I will say, what if Wonka's good?
It might be good. People seem to be thinking it's pretty good. Wonka might be it, man. Wonka might be it.
Wonka might save.
They might be onto something with this Wonka. It might save cinema again. If we go see that, that should be a big group episode that we do with the people that we go with. And until next time, it's been a pleasure.
Everyone, see you very soon.
We'll see you on the next episode.